Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you need an inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-okay.
Little known fact about my guest today, when she was a teeny tiny little girl, she sat in a hotel room with her face pressed way too close to the glass of a television screen because she was watching her mom, LaShawn's, accept the Tony Award for her role in The Color Purple. And at that moment, watching the jubilation and pure joy that her mom was experiencing, she wanted to do the very same thing when she grew up. Well, she actually wasn't fully grown when she got the chance because only a teen, she found herself starring in the Broadway musical Jagged Little Pill, and now she too is a Tony nominee. I'm so thrilled to share Celia Rose Gooding with you on the podcast today.
A-OK.
I'm incredibly excited to have Celia Rose Gooding on the podcast today, who now has another thing added to her name. Mm-hmm. Now we have Tony nominated Celia Rose Gooding on the podcast. And this is a new addition to your moniker. How does it feel?
It feels really, really good. It feels really, really cool. It's wacky. It's the most, like, if I think about it too hard, it's just the wildest thing. In the middle of a pandemic to get a Tony nomination, it feels amazing. One, it's like one of my greatest dreams since I was like 6 years old. But like the fact that it's here and this soon and this early, especially during this time, it's wacky, but it's the best kind of wacky.
Did you watch? I mean, they were at a very civilized time this year. They were at noon, so it's not like you had to wake up at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
Were you aware that it was Tony Nom Day?
Oh, yeah. I definitely knew. I didn't think that I was going to be nominated. I really didn't think I was going to be nominated. I thought that, like, there were just many other people in my cast who were worthy of nominations who still ended up getting nominations. But I wasn't thinking I was going to get nominated. So I really was just trying to like keep cool. I told my mom, I was like, hey, I really don't think I'm going to watch it just because like, I know I'm not going to be nominated. It's a really cool day. I also have no idea when the Tonys are going to happen. It just doesn't seem like my thing. I'm already anxious about it. I just think I'm going to sit this one out and wait to hear when the rest of the world hears, when I open Twitter 20 minutes later and figure out what's going on.
Right.
And so like 5 minutes before the nominations were to start, I had this like deep stomach ache and I just had to sit with my mom and be like, fine, let's just watch it. And so we did. And now we're here.
So when it happens, when this unexpected thing happens, only unexpected to you, by the way, because anyone who has listened to the cast recording, if they're not lucky enough to have been in Massachusetts or New York where the productions have been, or watched YouTube clips or gotten to see the show, which I was lucky to have done, you're the center of this play as much as anybody else is at the center of this play, and your work in it is so astonishing. And there would have been a lot of angry letters written if you weren't nominated. So thank you for letting me save my stamp and use it to get the vote out, which is what I ended up using it for. Because you're extraordinary as Frankie in Jagged Little Pill, my friends. That's the show we're talking about. And Celia's mom is LaShawn's, who's a Tony and Emmy winning actress. Mm-hmm. So she has been to this rodeo many times as a nominee, as a winner. And so when you were feeling freaked out or that feeling in your stomach that's so visceral and everyone can relate to it for all sorts of reasons, this mm-hmm. just happened to be around this, what was actually happening between the two of you once you decided to turn your computer on and watch?
My mom is like any mother, or like any great mother, was the person who was like, you're absolutely going to get nominated. I don't know why you don't believe in yourself.
Like, she said that.
Absolutely.
She said it loud. Yeah.
She told me before the nomination, she was like, Celia, I really do think you're going to get nominated for a Tony. And I was like, Mom, I'm 20 years old. It's my Broadway debut. It's a jukebox musical. Like, I really didn't think that it was in the cards for me. And my mom, being the fantastic support system that she is, she was like, no, you're absolutely, absolutely going to get nominated for your work. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm glad you think so. Thanks, Mom. My mom was also the same person who was like telling me at the age of 8 that I was going to be performing for millions. So, I mean, I always took my mom's advice as her being incredibly supportive, but also her being really, really kind and really uplifting, as all great mothers should be.
Right.
But yeah, she was a lot more, she had a lot more faith than I did. And I'm sure she knew that part of me was like dying to watch it, but she knows that when I get anxious and when I get very frantic, she knows that now is her time where she has to be calm and has to center me and let me just go through the cycle of my freak out, and knows that it will pass. But she knew well before I did.
Well, that's incredible.
Yeah,
not just because, I mean, she's right, and for all the reasons that all of the people who nominate people for Tonys voted for you. I think as a parent, I'm going to be obsessed with her and her parenting style, because as a parent, so much of me is like, do I protect them? Do I sort of prepare them for the worst so that they can handle it when it happens? It's such an interesting balance between sharing what I really think and sort of this protection instinct that I have. And so I just love that she was sort of unbridled in her complete positivity, enthusiasm, and not afraid to say out loud the thing we want for someone we love.
Yeah.
And maybe even to help manifest it with more goodwill in the world instead of fear.
Exactly. She always manifests goodness for me. But there was also a point where, like, she did say, hey, just in case it doesn't go the way you want it to, that changes nothing about the work you've done. Other people's opinions of your work has no effect on what your work is, as long as you continue to believe in it, and as long as you continue to put your best self forward, and as long as you continue to be proud of yourself, awards will mean nothing. And at the end of, like, I love the Tonys, and I do not get me wrong, the Tonys are my everything. However, like, at the end of the day, whether or not I got a nomination, whether or not I win, who knows? I'm still going to have this honor and this opportunity to tell that story. And I'm not doing it for the nomination. I'm not doing it for the awards. Of course, it's a very shiny, beautiful add-on. But, like, she always reminded me that no matter what happens, the work is what's most important. And the work is something that no one can take away from you. So as long as you continue to fall in love with the work and find joy in the work and find peace in the work, whatever happens, nothing will take away from what you have, because what you have is the work.
Right. So you started this journey at a very young age. I mean, you obviously had a guide within this industry, in your mother. Mm-hmm. Some kids sort of see that and rebel against it, or see the reality of the day-to-day of what it is to be a professional artist and go, that's not for me, or it is for me, which mm-hmm. in your case, it was. But when did you, I guess I would ask, when did you feel like you could say that out loud? Like, I want to do this. Was there a moment where it went from, I love doing this, to I want to do it forever?
I the moment where I knew that I wanted to be a performer, I didn't actually really know that what I was looking for was performing. I remember, and I love telling the story, I remember I was 6 years old in the hotel room with my mother, my sister, and my grandmother the night of the 2006 Tonys, and I was watching my mom accept her award. And I remember just looking at the TV. I was way too close to it, my tiny little eyes receiving that much television at once. But I remember just seeing her face light up. And it was a type of joy that, like, I didn't really see often in my mother, but I knew that it was something that was making her really, really happy. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 6, I was like, I want to be as happy as my mom is right now. And I put both of my hands on the TV and said, I want to do that. And what I meant by that was, I want that joy. I want that undeniable, unabashed, just joy. And I found that in theater. And I think the moment that I knew that I wanted to do it professionally was, I think, right after the reading. It was a short period of time. I didn't think that they were going to ask me to continue because I was young and didn't have a lot of training. I just thought that they needed someone to come in at the last second. And so I was like, they're going to have me for this. And then who knows? But after the reading, I was like, oh yeah, this is what I want to do. This is like, I want to do theater. I don't like what I wanted to be was a child psychologist. I was like, I don't want to do psychology. I don't know what college is going to look like. But my junior year, I was like, I want to be a professional performer. Like, I want to do Broadway. I want to do it. I guess someone up in the universe was listening to me and looking out for me. And here we are.
So were you doing school plays in elementary school and high school and middle school all through your young life? Was that in your extracurriculars?
Yeah. Between like first and third grade, I went to this school by my house, and the principal was really, really into Shakespeare, and she really wanted the students of her school to know Shakespeare. And so in second grade, we did this like Shakespeare medley, I think is what we called it, where we did like little scenes from a bunch of Shakespeare's plays. And I remember playing the ghost, one of the ghosts in Macbeth. I was the nurse from Romeo and Juliet in one scene, and then I was Juliet from Romeo and Juliet, obviously, in another scene. And I remember as a ghost, we got to put baby powder on our face. And so I like was always like, I want to be as ghosty as possible. So I put so much baby powder on my face. And so all you saw was really like baby powder, my eyes and my giant lips. And whenever I came on, the crowd would erupt into laughter because I looked ridiculous. Yeah, that was lower school. And then in middle school, I did plays kind of, but nothing like really intense. Shakespeare, I didn't get back to Shakespeare until I went to a conservatory in my high school, in my high school summers. But yeah, I did like Schoolhouse Rock at school and stuff like that. But I really
You weren't doing musicals.
No, I wasn't really doing musicals like that. I didn't think that I wanted to be in musical theater. I wanted to be an actor. I really, really wanted to do like straight plays and movies and TV. But I also really loved singing, but I didn't think that there was room for me to do both. I didn't think I had a strong enough voice to be a musical theater singer, a musical theater performer, pardon me. I think I did little musical theater camps just because I loved doing it, but I didn't think that I had a strong enough voice. I just didn't think that was what I was going to do. So I thought I wanted to be an actor, and I really got into acting. In high school, over my summers, I went to this conservatory called Berridge Conservatory in Normandy. And my summers, I would go to Normandy for 3 weeks, and I would really fall into theater there. I did more Shakespeare there. I did like a musical theater workshop because I just could not shake the musical theater bug. And I did a writer-performer workshop. And Berridge was really the place where I got a lot of my training. It was where I found my confidence in myself. It was just a place where I went to really just fall in love with my artist and fall in love with whatever that was and whoever that was. And the reason I couldn't go back for a third year, I did 2 summers there. The reason I couldn't go back for a third year was because I was doing the out of town tryout at ART in Cambridge. And so, yeah, it all fell into place in a very interesting way, but I'm grateful for it.
And you started working on Jagged Little Pill when you were around 16 years old,
yep,
playing a character who was about your age.
Mm-hmm.
That's really wild.
Yeah, the timing of it is very interesting. And Frankie and I, our stories, although I'm not an adoptee, they are kind of similar. Both dark-skinned Black girls, both dark-skinned queer Black women, navigating predominantly white spaces, trying to figure out how we can be an activist in predominantly white spaces, not surrounded by a lot of our own culture when we go to school, trying to figure out where we are in the world, where we are in ourselves, and trying to figure out relationships with parental figures. It all actually fell into place in a really weird way. I found that I was doing a lot of internal work when trying to figure out who Frankie is, because in order to fight for Frankie the way I needed to, I had to fight for myself in a way that I didn't really know how to. And so Frankie really gave me a voice for myself that I didn't really have, or a voice that I didn't really know how to use. And so Frankie really gave me a lot of confidence in myself, because if there was a character that could be this outspoken and so young and so unsure, but still very confident, it allowed me to believe that I had the space to do that for myself. And so, yeah, Frankie came into my life at a point where I really, really needed her.
Wow. So were you identifying as queer out loud to people in your life when you got this play?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was definitely aware of my queerness. I didn't really know where I fell on the queer in queerness. I just knew that I wasn't straight. And so I tried I thought I was bi. I thought I was ace. I thought I was a lesbian. I really didn't know. And I just stuck with queer because it was as vague but as all-encompassing as I needed it to be. And I still am not 100% sure where I fall in the queer spectrum, but I think a lot of my growth in that has been taking away the pressure of needing to know and needing a label, because I thought I really needed that in order to be honest and authentic and real and actually queer. I thought I had to know who I was in order to say who I was.
Right.
But yeah, I was loud, but unsure. And I'm still very loud, a little less unsure, but I'm more comfortable with the unsureness of it all. I think trying to figure out what it is made me really, really anxious. And I'm trying to avoid anxiety. I feel like I'm already anxious enough without anything that I'm putting on myself. So anything that I can do to relieve anxiety within myself is just a step worth taking.
What an incredible thing to be given a script that has so many of the things that you're grappling with and growing into, and to get to sort of grow in real time from first reading to Broadway, right? It's like 3 years of a journey from one to the other. I think that's really an extraordinarily unique thing.
It absolutely is. I am so lucky. I'm so grateful for Diablo Cody, the writer of Jagged. I feel like she has been bugging my phone since I was like 8 years old and getting little tidbits of my life and putting them into the story so that I could look back and make sense of whatever's going on.
Right.
I am so grateful for her.
Well, let's talk about the creative team and the way you met them. I assume you auditioned for the first, was it a reading or a workshop, your introduction to the piece?
Yeah, my introduction, the first thing I did was a 29-hour reading, which is basically a reading that happens over a week. It's a really, really short turnaround. It's just getting people familiar with the book, familiar with the music, and presenting it in front of a small group of people. And the way I actually even, the way Jagged even found me was through Tom Kitt. And my mother and Tom Kitt were at some gala, not 100% sure, but what from what my mom told me, Tom was racking his brain and trying, they were looking for someone to play Frankie. They were looking for unheard of Black talent. And my mother, being the incredible mother manager that she is, was like, hey, I may have a child that fits the bill exactly. And my mom pulled up a video of my high school coffee house, this little talent show thing. And I was doing an acoustic cover of Hotline Bling by Drake. And yeah, she played that video for him and they called me in, and now we're here, which is the, it's pretty cool.
I love it. So what did you have to do with that first audition, and who was in the room, if you recall?
I remember Diane was in the room. Tom Kitt was in the room. Diane Paulus, the director. Diane was in the room. Tom Kitt was in the room, I think. I remember Brian Perry, the music director, was in there. And I remember I sang Unprodigal Daughter and That I Would Be Good. And well, actually, that wasn't even the first thing I sent to them. The first thing I sent to them before I even got in the room was me singing You Ought to Know. Okay. I sent that.
And were you familiar with, I mean, this record was like so meaningful for my generation. And I know, I listened to it right when it came out. And I wonder if you were familiar with it. Or did you get to know it through being cast?
I knew You Ought to Know. I knew some of Alanis's music. I didn't know all of it, and I didn't know as much as I was going to learn through the show, but I knew the classics. I knew You Ought to Know. I knew Ironic. I knew Head Over Feet. I knew all of those just because anyone who ever had access to the radio probably knew those songs.
Yeah.
And I loved You Ought to Know. You Ought to Know was probably my favorite Alanis Morissette song before I even knew how to pronounce Morissette properly.
Or Alanis.
Alanis, properly.
Or Alanis, like Celia, Celia. Right, exactly.
Yeah, I listen, if I ask people to pronounce my name right, I better pronounce my boss's name right. I should definitely do that.
And you have. You got it.
Amazing. Yeah, I sent in You Ought to Know. They called me in. I sang Unprodigal Daughter and That I Would Be Good. And I remember I was standing in the room often and they kept bringing in people to read for Joe. And I actually met Lauren Patton that day. We read scenes together. And I think we did a chemistry read with Lauren. I did a chemistry read with Lauren Patton and Ezra Minas, who are both in the cast now. Yeah, I did reads with both of them and I didn't hear back for a while. I thought they didn't like me and that was fine. I was just happy to even be in the room. It was one of my first big auditions. So I was like, the fact that I even booked it was a celebration within itself.
Right.
Little did I know. But yeah, that was my first few iterations with it. And then I booked the reading and the reading happened and then they kept asking me back and I was eternally grateful every single time. And now
that's such a scary moment, isn't it, when the thing ends and you're not sure if you're going through to the next stage.
Yeah,
so waiting periods in between, were there these uncertain moments or did it feel very fluid?
The waiting periods felt like decades. I'm not good with silence. I like answers, even if it's a no. I would rather an answer than no answer. And so there was a lot of time of just like me calling my agent and being like, hi, what do they think? Are they going with, like, do they know? And he's like, I have nothing to tell you, just as when you called me about 12 hours ago, I still don't have an answer for you. And when you call me 12 hours later, I probably still won't have an answer for you.
Right.
Yeah, it was terrifying because I'm, God, how old was I? I am 16, 17, just off of my first big audition. Still going through high school, trying to figure out what that's like, and also waiting to hear if my dreams are coming true. And I was really young and really naive, and I'm still very young and still a lot more naive than I would probably like to admit. But it was terrifying. But I had my mom constantly saying, no answer is better than the no answer.
Yes.
And yeah, it just, I remember getting the call that I was going to ART. It was my senior year, I believe I was in a free period. So everybody was around and I knew that that was the day that I was getting the answer. I was just holding my phone, waiting to get an answer. And I remember my phone started buzzing. I looked at my phone. It was my mom and I sprinted out of the building. I had to be away from everyone. I had to be outside. It was like kind of drizzly, overcasty weather. And my best friend, me and my best friend Kiani, we were waiting and waiting. I was looking at the phone ringing and I didn't want to pick it up because I was so scared. And she actually ended up picking up the phone for me and putting it to my ear. And the first thing my mom says is, "What do you want your name to look like in the playbill?" And I started sobbing. And yeah, it's been wheels up ever since.
Yeah, I love that. I love wheels up. That's so awesome. Talk to me about the sort of way in which, you know, you described a little bit about your character sort of intersecting with the character of Frankie in this musical, and sort of the vulnerabilities and, you know, the way you described it was just so eloquent and honest. How does a director, and I'm assuming she did because you all stayed with the show and it really feels like a family. So I have to imagine there's a safety net. Talk to me about how, you know, it's a long time ago now, and I'm sure it's evolved in so many ways. How does the director set up a space for you to feel safe? And maybe more than that, if you could do it again, are there ways that you would have asked for that didn't happen in the way that you had wished for?
Yeah. I think the first few, I would say like the first couple weeks of the workshop were really tough for me because it was my first time ever working in that kind of space. So I didn't really know what to do. Like I was surrounded by industry professionals, people at truly the top of their game, like Pulitzer winners, Oscar winners, Tony winners, just like an incredible group of people. And I am this little Black girl from Mount Vernon, New York, who has never really done anything like this before. And I found myself often looking to others for approval, and that really took me out of the scene work. I found myself being really, really worried about Celia and not really worried about Frankie. And that had an extreme toll on my performance because I can't be worrying about Celia in a world where Celia doesn't exist.
Right. And worrying that people would think you were good enough, that you deserve to be in a professional.
Yeah, I just really wanted them to like me. Mm-hmm. I really just wanted to be liked. And that is something that transfers well out of only the industry. It's just me being a person. I want to be liked. I do. And that was something that really distracted me. And I remember Diane pulled me aside one day and was like, "You don't have to keep looking at me for approval. Mm-hmm. You're here. You walking into this building every day and signing in is all the approval you really need. Mm-hmm. Like, you're here for a reason. We called you here for a reason. You're good. You're safe here. Just tell the story. Do what we hired you to do because you can do it. We believe in you. So believe in yourself." And that was what really cracked my mind open. The idea that like, oh, I'm not constantly on trial. I'm not constantly trying to prove myself. I've passed that point. I have been proven. I've proven that I'm capable. So now I can relax a little bit and do what I set out to do. And that has honestly changed my life. That advice and the fact that I'm still young and I'm still very much a student, like the fact that Diane Paulus pulled me aside and was like, "Hey, we believe in you.
Yeah.
It's time to believe in you too." And I was like, "Oh my God, Diane Paulus has given me permission to believe in myself. Amazing. Now if Diane Paulus believes in me, how dare I not believe in myself?"
Right.
And so, yeah, just they were very, very patient with me because they saw a whole lot more potential in me than I probably did in myself at that time. And so they were patient and they were just like, she's got it. She's just got to believe in herself. And the moment that like I clicked into it and the moment that I recognized or the moment that I began to recognize my potential, I feel like I finally clicked into the wavelengths that everyone else was on. And that was what really got me through. And the fact that like Diane was an incredible director, but also the team itself, there was no one black in the creative team. And so they really looked to me to tell the truth about my experience so that we could inform this story the way it needed to be informed in order to tell an authentic story. And the idea that these titans of their field wanted me to tell, they just wanted to hear about my life. The fact that they thought that my story and my experience, my lived experience was that worthy. It blew my head up a little bit, honestly. It just gave me so much room and so much freedom to do what I did 8 times a week and what I continue to do every day. But just, yeah, they made a space that was so accepting and so careful and so just really, it's just a really safe space for me to tell a story that I didn't know was worth telling at the time. And I really owe a lot of my growth as a person and as an activist and as an artist to those crucial rehearsal periods where they just wanted me to tell the truth and they wanted me to be my most authentic self when I, at the age of 17, didn't think that my authentic self was enough.
Mm-hmm. And the family that we see on stage, I mean, what's great about your show is, you know, they're the grownups and the kids. Mm-hmm. And within that, you know, the high school and town experience that surrounds, you know, that gives the context for this play. Elizabeth Stanley and Sean Allen Creel and Derek Klena play your sibling and parents. Mm-hmm. How did that family form into a very believable, complicated family that I saw on stage?
It was a lot of table work. Well, also, Elizabeth, Sean, and Derek are some of the kindest, mm-hmm. The most warm-hearted, funniest, just deeply experienced group of people. They're the best group of people I could have asked for to be working on my debut with. They are people who know what they're doing, and they're also people who are so excited to share the joy of theater with others. And they really just took me under their wing. And when we were doing table work, we were constantly joking around and just making me, it wasn't about me, but I really felt like they were doing anything they could to make me feel really, really comfortable. Because when I'm nervous, it's clear that I'm nervous. I'm not a very subtle person.
Have a tell? Like what are your tics or things you do?
I'm a fidgeter. I fidget. Uh-huh. And so like I'm either cracking my knuckles or picking at my nails or shifting in my seat or twirling a pencil, or had a fidget spinner at the time because I just could not. I have ADHD. I can't sit still, period.
Right.
Broadway
musicals seem like a great way to deal with that.
Exactly. It was feeding all of like the parts of my brain where I was like, oh, I literally like sitting still isn't great storytelling for live theater. Like there are things for stillness, of course, but like in live theater, when you're trying to keep the attention of people all the way in the back mezzanine, like it allows you to be a lot more mobile than maybe film or TV. And so performance, really singing and dancing was how I got my energy out. Like even when I was little, I was constantly twirling around the kitchen table or humming something or bouncing up and down in my seat or just doing something to get all of this energy out of my system. And so when I'm nervous, all of that is heightened. And they just created a space for me that was super, super safe. And when we had to get moving from table work to blocking, the family dynamic was super important. And so we spent a lot of time on it. And in rehearsal, it was something that we all knew that we had to put a lot of attention on and a lot of focus on to make it believable. And just by running scenes over and over again, we found this sort of like ebb and flow and natural chemistry between the four of us that really translated really, really well. And of course, because they're all awesome people, when we got, or when we had time to hang out outside of rehearsal and just like around and be around one another as a cast, I just found that like there is a sort of family dynamic-ish to them. Like I started to see Sean as like this parental dad figure of someone who I could go to and ask like, hey, I'm new to the business. I have no idea what I'm doing. Like any advice that you have or anything of just like any words of wisdom that you have. And they were also ready to share of themselves and give themselves. And same with Elizabeth, like I would always go to her and be like, hey, you're awesome. Can we go over this scene again? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? I was constantly asking questions and they were always so open and always so willing to give of themselves and to give of their experience. And Derek is one of the funniest people on the planet. I will die with that truth. Derek is hilarious. And so like he became an older brother of someone who I could like look to and joke around with whenever I was feeling like really, really anxious. He was just always someone putting a smile on my face and giving me a pat on the back and reminding me that I'm here for a reason and that I am worthy. And just they really unintentionally became like family to me. And so when we got on stage and had to play this family, nothing felt forced at all.
Were you all living in apartments together in Cambridge? Did you have a roommate or were you living on your own for the first time?
Yep, I was living in a 2-bedroom apartment for the first time on my own in the middle of my senior year of high school. I was living by myself. We were all in the same building. So Antonio, who plays Phoenix in the show, he lived right above me. And so some mornings, if we were both in our bathrooms at the same time, we could hear each other warm up in the mornings. And so one morning we sang Head Over Feet, but he was like right above. It was just silly.
That's fun. So awesome. I want to talk about that because 8 shows a week, I mean, you've sung your whole life. You obviously live with a Broadway artist. And so you know what it takes to take care of your voice and the discipline it is to be in a show 8 times a week. Mm-hmm. How did you handle vocally? Also, the dancing is amazing in this show too, by the way. Just yeah, need to is. Put that out there. Incredible choreography, which you learned and you do. And, you know, you had to do all this stuff for the first time. Mm-hmm. And how did you begin to learn your voice and what you need to sustain it?
Trial and error, mm-hmm. honestly. And my mom's database of contacts. My voice teacher, Marlon Sonder, he was a contact that I found through my mom. My acting coach, Mariska Phillips, someone I found through my mother, and just people who knew me but also knew that like I was like, there are people who knew me, but also knew my mother. And they knew that like, if my mom's taking it seriously, then right. I'm taking it seriously and they have to take it seriously. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm doing a favor for my friend's kid. Like, no, we're getting ready. Like the village was gathering to raise mm-hmm. the child. Right. Yeah. And so I'm really, really, so lucky and so blessed. And I just like the way my life has sort of molded itself to prepare myself for this moment and for this time. It really feels like somebody out there has been bugging my life and making sure that like I have, like when I say bugging, I mean like there's a microphones everywhere and cameras, because like I really do feel like my entire life has been geared together for this moment. Mm. And so yeah, I had to figure out how to properly speak and how to keep my speaking voice in the right register, because I didn't even know that like there's a way to talk to support your singing. I hope I'm still doing it right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have an incredible, incredible community around me of theater professionals and of industry professionals, and they're all people who support me and want me to do well and want me to succeed. And so they're giving all of themselves and I'm giving all of myself. And it's just when people who care about what they're doing, when they come together, it's really hard to mess it up. It works in a way that is, it can only really be described by like magic and fate.
And then the pandemic happened and Broadway shut down. In the middle of this ride that you were on, it's like the roller coaster was at the very top and they're like, it stopped. Mm-hmm. And you're on the top. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, yeah, do I climb down? Like, what do I do? So can we just talk a little bit about, you know, when you say wheels up, wheels were up, mm-hmm. and then the flight stopped.
Yep. In the middle of the sky.
Yeah.
In the very
well, luckily middle. Landed you safely.
Yes, very safe landing. But not the destination.
Right. And not like, how long are we, when are we coming back? And it's been a long time, except this week, you guys reunited.
Yes. It's been the most special week. It's been great. I was just talking about this. Having an opportunity after what felt like years of not being able to be with that cast family and tell that story. It's been the longest period of time since I started working on the show that I've been without the show, not really knowing when it's going to come back.
Right.
It's the first time this has ever really happened. And so... yeah, the first couple of months, I will not lie to you, the first couple of months of the pandemic and the first couple of months of the shutdown were really tough. Yeah. Just mentally, I didn't really understand. I mean, I just didn't really understand what was happening. Like, I didn't really get that, like, what felt like me just getting started with this opportunity, even though I'd been working on it for years, I felt like I was just getting started.
Right.
Because we only opened like 3-4 months prior.
Right.
And I felt like I was just getting into the swing of things. And then life had a funny way and here we are. But yeah, it was tough.
Do you want to sing that?
Hmm?
Do you want to sing that line?
Life had a funny way. It was fun.
Thank you.
But yeah, I was confused. I was really sad and just really like, dang it, why now? Why this? Why is our administration not keeping why is no one taking this seriously? Like, I just felt like it. Or when I say no one, why is no one in power? Or why is, I just feel like if it's, I don't know. I just felt like I was having my favorite thing taken from me by a group or by a system or a society that didn't really get how much it meant to me. 'Cause Frankie really helped me feel seen in a way that I never really felt seen before. Being a young Black girl and growing up in a predominantly white community, it's very, very isolating and it's very hard to see yourself and see your story as something worth telling. And when I found Frankie, I found myself in a way that I didn't really know was possible for me. And then I started working and I started getting into the groove of it and finding my confidence and feeling my zhuzh and just doing all that I really wanted to be doing. And then just like that, it changed. And I was back to being in my high school bedroom and not really knowing what I'm doing with my life. And there was that dark time, of course, but then I realized that like, we're coming back. I just got to find something to do to fill that time. And I'm doing a lot better than I was in March and April. But it was tough. I missed my job. I still miss my job. But like, I have learned I've learned to exist outside of it. And I'm figuring out who I am outside of it, because at the age of 16, my life went from like, I'm a girl in high school to I'm that girl in Jagged Little Pill. And that was my life for like 3 years, just I'm that girl in Jagged Little Pill. And now, although I am still that girl in Jagged Little Pill, I'm actually I really love crystals and I like metaphysical work and I love communications and I love other stuff. Because I started with the show so young, my entire world was the show. That was like everything to me. Right. And when it was taken away, I was like, oh God, what do I do now? It was like right. Someone cutting off my oxygen supply.
Yeah.
I am grateful for this time because I'm learning how to exist outside of my career. And I'm learning how to be a fully fledged human again.
Right. And it will come back and you will get to go back to it and think about like the depth and all of these other layers now that you're just describing that will go into the work. It's going to be even more extraordinary. But also you haven't just been, you know, doing kind of continuing education for yourself. I see you out there. I see you being so active and lending your voice and your name and your heart and your talent to organizations and charities and you know, being a role model for so many young people and using that space with such generosity. And that's a really incredible thing to observe.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's weird being my age or feeling as young as I do. I feel like I'm 12 years old every day when I'm very much not.
Right. Well, you look very young.
Thank you. I hope to look young forever.
You have good genetics. I feel really confident that that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I get that. I looking at my family, I think I'll be okay for a while.
Yeah, you're going to be good.
But being this young and having a platform of any kind, I owe it to myself and I owe it to my young self and I owe it to young people everywhere to just tell the truth and be a decent human being and do what I would be doing whether or not I had a platform. But if I have one and if people look up to me for any reason, I gotta be doing what I would want to look up to, you know?
Well, you have a megaphone right now and all I hear coming through it is positivity. And that's really important because I know so many of my friends that I speak to on this show didn't feel like they had that. Like they just didn't feel represented and seen or like they found anyone who looked like them or felt like them in the arts. And so what a thing to be that for, I mean, millions of people. It's heady and it's a lot to carry around and maybe something to not think about too much because it is so intense. But you're doing it with such grace and such dignity. So thank you. Thank you for a mother of a 17-year-old having you out there. Just, it's a beacon. And
thank you.
You're just an incredible, incredible Tony-nominated artist. That's what you are. Before we go, is there a little known fact that you can share about you?
A little known fact about me. as a kid, as a wee tot, I went to clown camp. Okay. And what I mean by that is I went to this summer camp, and every year I would only do like clown classes. Like I really wanted like stilt walking and plate spinning and juggling and ribbon twirling. And so for like 3 summers in a row, I went to the summer camp, challenge camp, shout out to challenge camp. I learned clown tricks with Miss Jackie. And that's a little known fact.
That's fantastic. I hope that you can unearth some photographs from that camp because there's got to be something.
Oh, I'm sure.
Documentation.
I'm sure my mother has something on. I'm sure she has it. I think all of those photos from that time period have been etched out of my memory simply because of embarrassment.
Right.
But I'm sure my mom has a few gems.
Well, we will ask her. Celia Rose Gooding, thank you for this time and for just being such an extraordinary human and artist. And I think I speak for the planet when I say that I cannot wait to see all the things that you do. And whatever they are, we're all here cheering. So thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this, and this has truly exceeded my expectations.
Oh.
I am really grateful that you have me here. It was really a pleasure and a joy.
Oh, well, until next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The Little Known Facts theme song was written and performed by Georgia Famusa with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. And episodes are recorded in New York City and edited by Nicholas Clark.